on today's episode.
Trust God, not just to take care of you, but trust that he also is capable of the miraculous. And sometimes that miraculous comes through human hands. There have been some really amazing developments in medicine and science in recent years, that doctors doing surgery on babies in the womb to correct congenital deformities and things like that. And it's successful and the child is born, everything's fine. And it's just, you know, to think that they're doing this, they're operating on organs that are, you know, the size of a fingernail, you know, and it's just amazing the things that can happen today. Yes, people are doing that, but these are also gifts from God, and, you know, embrace those and trust that we're not going to assume that God is going to give the outcome that we want when something, you know, we learn something negative, but trust that he's able to.
Welcome to the Life Challenges podcast from Christian Life Resources. People today face many opportunities and struggles when it comes to issues of life and death, marriage and family, health and science. We're here to bring a fresh biblical perspective to these issues and more. Join us now for Life Challenges.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm Krista Potratz, and I'm here today with Pastors Bob Fleischman and Jeff Samuelson. And today we're going to talk about a prenatal diagnosis, and specifically what to do with a prenatal diagnosis. Typically, when a woman finds out that she's pregnant, she will go in to see the doctor. And oftentimes, they'll do an ultrasound right away to see if the heart is beating. And then usually from there, there will be many visits scheduled. There's usually talk of genetic testing. Sometimes it's recommended to do certain tests depending on the age or the health of the mother. And so then a lot of times the woman has to decide if she wants the testing, what kind of testing to do. So we're going to kind of talk about some of these things today. When somebody gets offered these tests, and I think, you know, most people now get offered some type of genetic testing right away at the beginning. How valuable is or isn't this type of testing? What tests are we really talking about here?
Well, oftentimes they'll get into like ultrasound, and then they'll have maybe MRI if they spot something. And in our CLR New Beginning staff, we've just gone through, and we are in the middle of going through a number of pregnancies. And so this is a very pertinent issue for us. And so they'll identify something. They want to just see if the child's all right. Now, remember that this is an abortion-minded culture. So when you have an abortion-minded culture, many of the physicians who are offering this are going to say, oh, it looks like your child may have a disability of some sort. We're going to do this early enough so that we can help you have a safe termination of the pregnancy, which, of course, safe for you, not safe for the child. So a lot of times that's behind it, but not always. For example, when a family has a history of problems, they'll want to do some testing for that so that you can prepare. It might even alter the way they want the mother. Like, for example, they might want the mother, if she's prone to high blood pressure or something like that, they're going to want to do some testing, see if there's stress on the child, and then prescribe medication, prescribe a regimen for the mother to do. I know that on my staff, one of the mothers in my office was told right up front that they wanted to do this testing. She told them right up front, you know, if this is, you know, a search and destroy mission to abort a child that doesn't live up to some sort of standard, it's a waste of time and money. But the doctor assured her, this is so that we can make adjustments. And so just assume for the worst. What if it's a bad thing? You discovered something that's deemed bad, you know. A pro-life Christian parents will just simply say it enables us to prepare then
I think I was offered genetic testing with each of my pregnancies. It was always presented in that way. Well, you know, this is just so if there is a situation, then we'll know how to handle it or what to do. In my case, at least, it just didn't seem like I would be handling things any differently if there was a situation like that. But I know, you know, there are many Christian couples that will go through the genetic testing. And like you mentioned too, Bob, like if there's family history or just different things, just so that they can prepare or know how to handle a situation.
Yeah, it's probably helpful at this point just to mention that there are two different types of things that we're talking about with the testing. There are screening tests, and these are usually first trimester, maybe into the second trimester, and they're designed to either rule out a condition or note that there's an elevated risk of a condition, but they don't confirm anything really. It's just kind of like, okay, well, we did this and that means that we need to take a closer look at this, or we did this test and we think you're in the clear on this thing. But if there is reason, the next step is officially called diagnostic testing. And that's usually not so much in the first trimester unless they really know there's a good reason, more like the second trimester. And those tend to be a lot more accurate. They tend to be a lot more involved, and they get a lot more down into the, okay, we checked the genes, we checked the DNA, and this is here or this is not here. The screening is one level, and then the diagnostic tests are the next level.
It's important to remember, too, that even in the diagnostic testing, they're not foolproof. I mean, mm-hmm. they still will be mistakes. One of the big controversial things occurred in Iceland a few years back, where Iceland was boasting that they were able to get rid of Down syndrome in the whole island. And they found out the way they did it is they were screening people. They were doing the prenatal testing. And if it looked like there was a suggestion that you were carrying a pregnancy with Down syndrome, you were encouraged to abort the child. It can be used in a poor way, in a bad way. My problem that I have is that we do seem to have an insatiable desire for knowledge. So like the more we know, the more we want to know. I remember 50 years ago, amniocentesis was like the kind of the common staple of prenatal testing that would go on. And I remember one couple had told me, good friends, they felt guilty that they would have an amniocentesis because it was used for search and destroy. But they needed it to check out other things going on so that they could prepare. They were very pro-life, loved children, would have taken children no matter how they came, but they hated to be associated with that. Christian parent has to look at it for what it is. Because you can today learn more, we can do genetic screening, we can do additional testing. It's not a bad thing to just ask yourself why. And really, because you think more of others than you do of yourself, your answer to that question is, I'm interested in this. If it's something that I can help my child or help the wife during the pregnancy.
I think that's a good thing to ask the why, because the question I was going to ask too was just what should a Christian parent kind of do or a Christian mother when their doctor is telling them, oh yeah, I think you should get tested. Do you just kind of go along with what the doctor has said, or should you take more time to reflect a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, understand and ask if you don't understand, well, doctor, why are you suggesting this? You know, what is the purpose of this? And if that's a satisfactory answer, then okay, what exactly is this testing for? What's the accuracy rate? What are things that are commonly suggested with this result or that result? Get informed and don't just go along with the doctor because the doctor knows best, because doctor doesn't always know what's best in these situations, and sometimes doctors have agendas too.
It has been my experience that it's of an immense value that the doctor knows how you feel about these things. I used to tell people, you know, well, just ask your doctor, talk to your doctor about these things, see how they feel. But the reality is that my experience has been that the doctors will acknowledge your position, even if they disagree. We have a family doctor who's a member of a church body that's in favor of abortion rights. So I'm fairly confident that he's probably fine with it. Probably one of these who says, not for me, but if that's your choice, then you got to live with it. And so it's good for me to know that, but it's even better for him to know where I stand on that stuff. So when we get talking about a wide assortment of medical conditions dealing with the beginning or the end of life, I try to be very clear who I am. And I'll tell you, the best way to start with stuff like that is like the Christian Life Resources Advanced Medical Directive. Because that, it's got a Christian component that's designed, you have trouble articulating your faith or maybe even mustering up the courage to say something, you can say, well, I have this document that gets it out in front. And it establishes who you are because you can control, say who you are. You can't control what they're going to say. And if you've been involved with the medical system, right about the time you get really used to your favorite doctor, they move on. It happens all the time. Many mothers have called me and said, yeah, you know, the doctor that I had with my first two children isn't there anymore. Retired, right. They moved.
Bringing doctors into this too, it makes me think, okay, how important is it that my doctor is pro-life? Like when we're talking about, I think like OBs or that type of thing, is it important to choose a pro-life doctor or is it just important to really know where you stand and then you can face kind of any doctor? What would your advice be to somebody?
I think it's going to vary a lot of just how you feel about things. I mean, one of the big things is like, you know, okay, you know, what kind of doctor is this you're seeing? You know, if you're seeing a cardiologist, yeah, it might not matter that much whether, you know, he or she is pro-life or not. But when it gets to an obstetrics gynecologist, you know, it's like, okay, how am I going to feel if I know that the doctor that I'm seeing to help me with my pregnancy also does abortions in the other room? Am I going to be comfortable with that? But if he doesn't actually do those abortions, but he actually just, you know, he's okay with other doctors who do, you might be able to work with that. Again, you know, making the point that Bob said, you explain, this is never going to be an option for me. Then he or she knows, okay, I'm not going to suggest it. You know, hopefully we'll understand that. But, you know, there's a lot going to matter. I mean, obviously, the ideal is to have a pro-life doctor, but you're not always going to be able to know that either.
No, I mean, you know, there was, there's a pro-life organization for doctors, and so some just different people in the pro-life movement say, oh yeah, you should definitely find a doctor that is part of this organization. And I remember, I think like with one of my pregnancies looking, and there was one doctor in the whole like greater Milwaukee area who was part of this organization. And the doctors at the place that I went to, they were very comfortable with my pro-life stance. I think they were used to seeing people that had similar views with me, but they weren't on this list of doctors. And so it just made me just wonder, okay, you know, is it okay that I see this other doctor? And you know, what is maybe the benefit of seeing, you know, somebody who's specifically voiced themselves as a pro-life doctor? Mm-hmm.
One thing to remember is they are also the mission field. You have to make decisions and get people who are expert enough in what you're trying to do to get the job done. For example, we're doing a lot of work with neurologists lately in our family. And if I found out that our frontline neurologist was on the board of directors of an abortion rights group, I'm fine with that, to be honest, because I'll view her as the mission field. But she is a top drawer neurologist, and I'm looking for a top drawer neurologist. But again, you know, a lot of times it's what you're trying to accomplish. When you have options, I've never been totally comfortable, and I know we've talked about this in other contexts of boycotts and things like that, primarily because if all the strong Christian, pro-life Christians basically blacklisted all of the abortion people, who's going to share with them the truth? And the moment they start giving you advice that talks like anything that's going to endanger your child, you do what I tell everybody to do, and that is you get a second or third opinion. I think it seems idealistic today that says, you know, I'm just going to always look for the the perfect pro-life doctor. Because to be honest, I mean, there have been on occasion pro-life doctors that have not been very good what they do. You've got the other problem, you know, so just having the credential of being pro-life doesn't make you the ideal one.
Shifting back to the genetic testing then. So if a mother finds that the test that she has done the genetic testing and it has come back now positive for something, that what is the next step? What should she do in that situation?
Well, second opinion, second, third opinions. I'm very big on that. There's going to be two kinds of things that are going to happen. You know, one doctor is going to say, we've discovered this problem. You know, it might clear up during the course of the pregnancy, or it might get worse. We don't know. But we're going to do this. We're going to do that, clearly with a mindset towards protecting the mother and preserving the child's life. You're going to get another doctor who's going to say, the child will not survive. I find this with anencephalic children born with undeveloped neural tissue. You know, the child's not going to survive. In fact, I had a case like this maybe a couple of weeks ago where the doctors had said, you've got this situation, the child's not going to survive. For the safety of the mother, we need to do an early delivery, which is an abortion. It was like 4 months into the pregnancy. And first of all, quite honestly, nonsense. When you have a problematic pregnancy, you are observed almost to the point of uncomfortableness. I mean, I've dealt with patients who they immediately want to hospitalize them, monitor the pregnancy for the last 3 months, 2 months of a pregnancy, something like that. They're going to know. Their concern is if the child dies in the womb, that they know the child has died, and remove it so that it's not going to cause an infection or anything like that. Okay, that's not that difficult to detect. It's not that hard to notice. And they'll say, well, you know, the child won't survive anyway. I always like to counter that with the statement, so you mean a child with this condition has never survived till birth? Well, of course they can't say that, you know. A lot of these conditions that during a pregnancy, they diagnose it and they'll say the child will not survive through the pregnancy. A lot of these conditions, there are cases where they survive. Anencephalic children will survive. Some, most don't, but some do. And they survive. They sometimes will live. I believe the longest I read about was 13 months.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So it's.
Because sometimes that's usually just can be a few hours, right?
Right. Right. And I was involved with a case where the child was born with anencephaly, and they had the pastor there. And the child was born. The pastor baptized the child. The child died within 3 hours. But the child was baptized. It was great comfort to the family. The point is that when you begin to treat the child as a subordinate human being because of a malady, there's something wrong there. And will there be times where either the mother or the child will die? There usually is something wrong with the mother, too, that needs to be dealt with. Like she's got cancer, she's got a heart defect. You're dealing with something wrong with the mother. When we're just looking at the child, let's just say they give you the darkest prognosis you could possibly get, my advice would be find someone that will monitor you, someone that will keep an eye on it. Because they can be wrong.
Bob did great job of the practical things there. Just add some things, you know, that if you get this diagnosis, what do you do? One of the first things I'd say is take a deep breath. Very often there's going to be a pressure to, okay, well, this is the result, so make a decision now. There's no need to make that decision. You know, as Bob pointed out, these things can go on. So don't panic. Take that deep breath. Don't make any rushed decisions. And then spiritually, pray and involve your pastor. You know, talk to him. This is something important. It's a spiritual issue. Talk to him before. Talk to him during. Don't wait until after. Obviously, you know, I think sometimes these questions are focused on the mother. We assume there's a father involved too. So make sure that your husband is very much a part of all these conversations as well. And just following up with Bob's advice of getting a second opinion, gather good information. There's some unreliable, you know, things you probably can pick up on social media and the internet, but find the good stuff, get the facts, and make sure that what you're being told lines up with that, and that you fully understand what's being told to you.
That's all really great advice too, because I've heard of some situations too where somebody maybe had that first round of screening and then they were told, oh yeah, your kid, you know, has this much chance of having Down syndrome or something, and then their kid was born completely fine too. So sometimes, yes, getting second opinions or just taking time in that situation would be really beneficial.
Now, one of the things to keep in mind with regard to second opinions is a lot of people will make the mistake, you know, they'll ask their doctor, I'd like to get a second opinion. Do you recommend someone? No. That's not how a second opinion works, because generally the doctor's going to recommend somebody who thinks just like he does, you know, or she does. And you need to step outside of it. And a lot of times, it's unfortunate, but a lot of times you have to take the initiative yourself. Now, we all become hand-tied by, you know, we're part of this, you know, network or that network. Our insurance covers this and doesn't cover that. It's a tough field to navigate. But remember what's at stake here. We're talking about a life, and so you want to be sure. And some institutions, you know, have a second opinion type network that they work at. I don't know to what degree there's kinship in it. Is it going to be, you know, their buddy that's going to be recommended to you? But there is help out there, and you got to pursue it. You have to.
We've talked about, you know, the why of the prenatal testing, the diagnosis and things like that. You know, there are good reasons and bad reasons. There are right and wrong. The right is, I want to be prepared. There's apparently a risk of X thing, you know, happening. I want to be prepared for that. Or maybe it's simply, I want to be tested to know if there is a risk of any sort there. But wrong kind of testing is, you know, something increasingly an option today is people who have this, I want a designer baby kind of thing. You know, maybe it's, well, I want one with this eye color and this hair color or whatever. And increasingly they're getting closer to being able to test that for that kind of stuff. But also just the sense of, well, life should be free of any challenges. There shouldn't be any problems. So the only right baby for me is a perfect baby. And so if I'm going to learn that there's anything, I want to know if there's anything wrong with my baby. And if it's imperfect in any way, then I don't want it. That's a wrong kind of motivation. And, you know, we certainly want to avoid that ourselves as Christians. And that's probably something also that we want to discourage, you know, when we come across it in, you know, conversations with friends and things like that, just to you know, encourage then this attitude of, well, whatever God gives you, that's a blessing, and rejoice in it.
The other thing too is to keep in mind that when you get a diagnosis of a problem, don't walk it alone. I mean, just beyond mother and father wrestling with it, loop in your pastor, loop in, you know, your strongest Christian friend. You sometimes need somebody that's going to tell you things that maybe you don't always want to hear. You know, somebody who's going to be more objective and not to be, you know, so wrapped up, because it is a highly emotional matter when you get these. But just remember this, the vast, vast, vast majority of pregnancies go through without a problem. I mean, so, you know, there's nothing that we're having in this conversation here that suggests that, well, maybe I won't have a child, you know, maybe I should avoid it. They do come out okay. You know, we're talking about those times when there's a little, you know, burp in the process, something that needs to be explored further. And you really can, you know, pursue it with a mindset towards assuring that you've done everything possible to have a successful pregnancy.
Anything else that we should kind of mention on this topic?
You know, we've we've definitely talked that there are positives to this.
Mm-hmm.
But just kind of summing up some of the cautions when we're dealing with this, three I's. One is invasiveness. Recognize that some of this testing is kind of invasive. Stick a needle in, you know, and grab something from the placenta. You know, there's risk involved with that.
And that's usually the diagnostic test,
yeah, when you're at that level. There are other tests that are, you know, basically, they take a sample of the mother's blood and look for certain, you know, genetic markers that would be, you know, present there. That's not so. But, you know, be cautious of the invasive kind because there's risk involved with that. Another is inaccuracy. Some of the testing that is out there for particular, you know, conditions or whatever is only at like 50% accuracy. But it's sold as being a lot more accurate than that. And so make sure that you understand exactly what level of accuracy the various test has. And sometimes, you know, I think Bob mentioned this, you know, it can be accurate at month three, but by month seven, it's resolved itself. And it, you know, so be aware of that. And then another, you know, a final caution is impatience. You know, don't make or take irrevocable decisions, you know, in the moment. There's often a sense of, well, this is a problem. We've got to resolve it now. Don't do, you know, let that motivate you. Don't, you know, let the doctor's sense of we got to hurry this up, you know, also lead to that kind of irresponsibility either.
And I know that you know, sound kind of almost academic, you know, get that second or third opinion and so forth. There is a very harsh emotional reality here, and that is most any of us are crushed when you hear the possibility that there might be something wrong with your unborn child. We lost our first child through miscarriage, and it was a miscarriage. We didn't have any testing or anything like that. It just happened. And so, but part of it is, remember who is the author of life and death. That's God. And in his role, you know, he makes a decision and you're not always happy with it, but he is God. And our judgment gets clouded. A lot of times we form these wild imaginations of bonding and all that kind of stuff. I mean, granted, it also happens, but I mean, we have these imaginations that are fostered by our culture and our environment. And get as emotionally attached to God, or maybe become more emotionally attached to God than even to the pregnancy. And so that when you get something like this, you recognize that, okay, God's saying, I've got more in store for you. You don't know what the future is going to hold, but let's take one more step. Let's take one more step and so forth. You just don't want to get into the position where that step is going to be that you usurp God's authority over life and death, and you make the decision to bring about death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was going to ask too, you know, if there were any other biblical type of principles that we could add to this conversation as well.
And that would be, you're a steward of life. Mm-hmm. We have to take care of life.
And in line with what Bob was saying, you know, trust God, not just, you know, to take care of you, but trust that he also is capable of the miraculous. Yeah. And sometimes that miraculous comes through human hands. There have been some really amazing developments in medicine and science in recent years that, you know, doctors doing surgery on babies in the womb to correct congenital deformities and things like that. And it's successful and the child is born, everything's fine. And it's just, you know, to think that they're doing this, they're operating on organs that are, you know, the size of a fingernail, you know, and it's just amazing the things that can happen today. Yes, people are doing that, but these are also gifts from God, and, you know, embrace those and trust that we're not going to assume that God is going to give the outcome that we want when something, you know, we learn something negative, but trust that he's able to and pray.
Thank you both for this conversation, and just want to also remind all of our listeners, too, that the Christian Life Resource website has information, too, on this topic and others related to it. You can find that at christianliferesources.com. And if you have any questions about the podcast at all, you can reach us at lifechallenges.us. And we look forward to seeing you back next time. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Life Challenges podcast from Christian Life Resources. Please consider subscribing to this podcast, giving us a review wherever you access it, and sharing it with friends. We're sure you have questions on today's topic or other life issues. Our goal is to help you through these tough topics, and we want you to know we're here to help. You can submit your questions as well as comments or suggestions for future episodes at lifechallenges.us or email us at podcast@christianliferesources.com. In addition to the podcasts, we include other valuable information at lifechallenges.us, so be sure to check it out. For more about our parent organization, please visit christianliferesources.com. May God give you wisdom, love, strength, and peace in Christ for every life challenge.